This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
You know what? I will say this, though, to start with the sports.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this question. Watching that Monday Night Football game last night, can you pick out the one play that, as a Jets fan, would drive me the most crazy with what we dealt with?
As a Jets fan, that would drive you the most crazy watching that game last night? Chris, you can help as well here.
What we're dealing with? I mean, we have a young quarterback, 23 years old, right? Like, you're trying to develop the young quarterback. You're trying to do whatever you can.
Is this a Jared Goff play?
This could be a Jared Goff play. I mean, that's why Sean McVay was hired, was to get the best out of Jared Goff. Can you pick out one play? And it happened early. The play happened early.
The play happened early
that would drive me crazy as a Jets fan.
I cannot identify the said play. I'm thinking of something with the way they appropriately used Jared Goff, but I can't think of what that play is specifically.
It was the first touchdown.
To Reynolds. When they rolled him out left.
Well, not even they rolled him left. They were sitting in the hole. All of a sudden, they got to the line really quickly. Buster Screen got caught up in the wash because he didn't know what the hell was going on. They had Reynolds in the backfield, and he's wide open at the pylon. Little trickery, but again, it's doing whatever it takes to have the outcome you're looking for. It's a little creativity,
ever. Here's the thing, though, and I understand your frustration, and I don't think Adam Gase is good at all, but when you look at Sean McVay, you're talking about one of the top five coaches in the NFL right now. I mean, this guy's an offensive mastermind, and he's shown it time and time and time again.
I understand that, but I mean, when you watch Jared Goff play, do you think that Jared Goff is more talented than Sam Darnold? Because I don't.
I actually do.
See, I don't think he's more talented than Sam Darnold. I think what you've seen from Sam Darnold hasn't been great, but I think that's a result of lack of talent around him, a bad offensive line, and on top of it, I don't think that Adam Gase is the offensive genius that he claims to be.
Well, that I agree with, but it's just hard for me. And listen, I'm not in love with Jared Goff. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback in the league, but it's hard for me to take a guy that, you know, for lack of a better term, led his team to a Super Bowl. Now they're 5-2. And say that he's not better than a quarterback that I have no idea what he is.
Yeah, but go back and look at all the things that Sean McVay has done for Jared Goff. I mean, we talked about this in the Super Bowl now. I mean, New England shut them down in the Super Bowl. But, I mean, one of the things that they would do is that they would get to the line of scrimmage early so Sean McVay in Jared Goff's headset could help diagnose what was going on. That's a great way to help a young quarterback. Adam Gase doesn't do that or has never attempted to do that. Do you see much motion with the Jets offense?
No, I think the Jets are stagnant. I don't think they're creative. I think that Gase is not done a good job with all. I'm not arguing any of that. I'm just saying, like I don't think Goff is that bad. I think Goff is a middle-of-the-road quarterback, and I don't know that I can say the same thing for Adam Gase right now and Sam Darnold. I think they are, I don't know, if not bottom of the barrel, close to it. At this moment, it's hard to say they're not.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, that's been the result. But what I see from Sean McVay in that offense is it looks real complicated with all the motion and movement and everything else, but they're pretty simple principles. It's just a lot of eyewash to change, you know, where defensive players are looking at and everything else. That's going to help out your offensive line. It's going to help out your quarterback. They consistently roll him out. There's never he's not a sitting duck, you know what I mean? Like, he's not a stationary target. Like, all those things would help. Like, we always see Sam Darnold. He's so much better when he's outside of the pocket, when he's rolling to his left or his right. That's when it seems like he has the most success. And I don't see enough of it. Like, you're not doing this kid any favors. Your offensive line's not good outside of Mekhi Becton. And you don't have a bunch of guys on the outside that can win one-on-one. And you saw that in the Buffalo Bills game in the second half. They're playing man coverage, and you had 4 total yards in the second half. I don't think something like that would happen if you had a more creative play caller. I don't.
I think I don't know, to be honest with you. I do believe, though, that you're lacking in so much in every area. Like, I still think that, and I think Sam will be good, but I think the jury is tremendously out on him. I think the lack of weapons that they've given him is an embarrassment, and I think the head coach has done a terrible job. So I don't blame it all on one, but I think these things, you know, mashed together as a grouping is just, it spells winless is what it spells for the Jets.
Yeah, but I think you also have to blame it on from how this whole thing started, too. I mean, I think, you know, what you've seen is, I mean, at this point, has been a culmination of the entirety of Sam Darnold being here with how he was handled to begin with. I mean, you draft him. Now, Todd Bowles is an unbelievable defensive coordinator. You're seeing that in Tampa. I mean, jury's still out if he can be a great head coach. We don't know yet. But you get a defensive-minded head coach. You got Jeremy Bates, who no longer coaches in the NFL as his offensive coordinator. You're playing three games in 10 or 11 days. And you got Teddy Bridgewater and Josh McCown. And you decide to start Sam Darnold week one? I mean, that aggravated me to begin with. And luckily, after that pick six, he played well in that Detroit game. And then you fast forward. I mean, would it have hurt to kept Josh McCown with the relationship he had with Sam Darnold to help Mudd a little bit? Probably not. That would have been nice. Then you fire Todd Bowles, hire Adam Gase. That's another new system in year two. You saw what Adam Gase did to Ryan Tannehill. I mean, you got this bad taste in your mouth. I mean, it's still to this day. You've seen enough to believe that Ryan Tannehill is actually a really good quarterback, but in the back of your mind, you still have that hesitation. Everyone still has that hesitation.
When you talk about the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, you never want to include Tannehill because you have that, yeah, but he was so bad under Adam Gase in Miami taste, right? You can't get rid of that taste.
You can't unsee it. And unfortunately, I think Sam Darnold is caught up in the same thing, unfortunately. And it's going to take a change of scenery, and it feels inevitable that as soon as, you know, when this mercifully is over this season, and they've won, you know, one or no games, that he'll be moved, and poor Trevor Lawrence will be exposed to this. Because unless they make changes up top, unless the structure of the organization changes, and Joe Douglas, a football person, is making these decisions, it's not going to change.
Yeah, no, I know. Unless you have blind faith listen, you got to hope that Douglas is good, and you have to hope they empower him. Because if one of those two things does not happen, you're just going to rinse and repeat. It'll just be a different quarterback and maybe with a higher ceiling and maybe a guy that can take lesser talent and make it good, but it's just going to be the same song and dance over and over and over again until you eventually get it right. And that's got to be the big concern for Jets fans heading into another season. You're going to move on from Sam Darnold. We know that now. Odds of you winning two games and not having a top two pick are almost infinitesimal. And you're going to move on from Darnold. You're going to hand the reins over to a rookie quarterback who hopefully you'll give some weapons and a decent offensive line to. But there's a lot of questions surrounding this organization.
A lot of questions. And you're going back. We've pretty much gone back. We wasted 2 years and we're back to where it started with McCagnan the year he got fired. Is you got a bunch of draft capital and a bunch of money to spend. And you're looking at who the next head coach is going to be. And that has to be Douglas making that decision. It has to be. This cannot be another situation where if it's Woody or Chris hires the head coach. It can't. It's not going
to
work.
If Douglas signed on to this job, he had to know what the order of operations would be, no? Like this is going to be your baby? You know, it's a 6-year deal. They gave him that. He's got longevity, obviously. He's going to be here for a long time, and it's got to be you. Otherwise, why would he take the job?
Well, he took the job because it's a 6-year deal. I mean, how often are you going to get a 6-year deal as a GM?
I understand that, but and still, if you're not going to have control and you're not going to have power.
Well, I mean, but how can you sit here now and just say, like, okay, Joe Douglas all of a sudden is going to have this power? When we asked, was it Dan Graziano I asked about moving on from Adam Gase? No, it was Sal Pal. And Sal Pal said that's not really a Joe Douglas decision. That's going to be an ownership decision.
Yeah, that's a major issue.
That's a huge issue.
A huge issue. I mean, that's a franchise-altering issue. If you have the Johnsons, and whether it's Woody or Chris or combination or whatever it's going to be, ultimately make the decisions of who your head coach is going to be. It's going to be, unless you hit a home run, unless you blind luck just pick out of the air and get the right guy, you're going to have a tough time ever winning in this league.
Yeah, and I don't care how good the quarterback is. I don't. Like, I mean, there's a handful of guys. I mean, the Elways, the Peytons, the Andrew Lucks, but even Andrew Luck, I mean, he should have had more success than he had. Now, he was great. I mean, he took a brutal team that had the first overall pick and won 11 games, but because it was so poorly managed, I mean, the poor guy had to retire. In the middle of his prime, which should be his prime, he had to retire.
Yeah. Well, they beat the career out of him.
Exactly right. So I don't care. I mean, Trevor Lawrence could be one of those guys and could be great, but he won't reach the heights that we think he could reach if this thing is going to continue to be managed the way it's managed.
Well, the only thing I'll say, and you're right, and do I have reservations? Absolutely, is that you think, and you feel pretty good about having a franchise left tackle in place, right? So you'll bring the quarterback in at least a franchise left tackle, which, as we see with the Giants, is a really big deal.
It's a huge deal. I mean, you saw it last night. The Bears' offensive line was terrible.
Oh my God. The Bears are just, they're terrible. They're the worst 5-2 team I've seen.
Yeah, because their defense is good.
Very good.
They got a good defense.
Their offense is awful.
Yeah.
I cannot watch Nick Foles play a football game and think to myself, this guy won a Super Bowl and outdueled Tom Brady in a Super Bowl. Like, that will never go away.
Yeah, but he's like a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL, man. I mean, he's a guy, if you put it with the right talent around him, with the right offensive line, with, you know, the system, he can have some short-term success. A lot of quarterbacks are like that. We get into this whole thing where it's like, every quarterback that's drafted high in the first round is going to turn out to be like Pat Mahomes. That's unfair. Those are unfair expectations to put on a kid. Like, because you drafted him in the first round, he's going to be the savior of your franchise. It doesn't happen that way. You got to support the young quarterback, either with talent on the offensive line, a really good offensive line, you know, weapons, or a great defense. And neither New York team has any of that. Any of it.
No. The only thing to say about the Jets is they're going to have collateral. They're going to have real pieces. You're going to have probably the top pick. You're going to be able to move on from Sam Darnold. You have Seattle's number one selection. You have Seattle's number one selection next year. You're probably going to have another high pick next year, and you're going to have a boatload of money. So, listen, those are things that are enticing. Now, whether you hit home runs with them or not remains to be seen. But I just laid out, I mean, that's a lot of positives in your corner.
It's a lot of positives. You're right. But I think the one holdup for me, if I was Eric Bieniemy or any one of these guys that, you know, you're hoping to get, is the influence of ownership in making some of these decisions. Because in all the good franchises, Dave, I don't care what the sport is, the owners, I mean, they're there to sign checks. That's what they do. They hire the right people, and then they let those people make decisions. That's how it's supposed to work.
That's what good organizations do. That's what good businesses do.
And right now, I don't think that either of the New York teams have been doing that.
I think you're 100% right.
I know the Jets haven't, and I think the dirty little secret with the Giants has finally kind of reared its ugly head.
The Giants
have
not.
With how the whole Gettleman thing went down.
It's been a disaster. Listen, we laugh at the Jets and they're winless and they could go winless and they're losing by a million points a game and all that. The Giants are not that far behind. The difference is you think you might have your head coach, and that is a big difference. You think you might have hit a home run with him, but results-wise, you're 1-6. You're competing, but you're still losing games.
Yeah, but even how they went about hiring Joe Judge, and I like Joe Judge a lot, I really do, is still a little bit strange. I mean, if your GM is, and I get it was an organizational hire, but still, well, I mean, it would lead you to believe that if Dave Gettleman does retire, you know, whatever you want to call it, retired, kind of gets fired or whatever it is, that the next GM is going to come from inside the organization. Because you're not going to, I mean, are you really going to have someone from outside of the organization? I mean, unless he's got ties to Joe Judge and just give him the head coach.
I think that they love, and this is interesting, and I've talked to Renan about this, I think they love Joe Judge to the extent that when they, and I don't even think it's an if at this point, when they move on from Dave Gettleman, Joe Judge will be directly involved in who the next GM is going to be.
Okay, so that's a positive.
Absolutely it is. If you like him and you trust him, and this is who he wants, and this is who he trusts, you'd figure, right, if 2 and 2 make 4, that this would be the right guy, hopefully, for this organization.
Yeah, I mean, that would make the most sense. And I think you're seeing that more and more in the NFL, that the GM and the coach are tied at the hip.
But who knows? I mean, can I sit here and tell you I have ultimate confidence in the Giants? No. How could you? Rick, the last decade has been bad. I mean, since they won the Super Bowl, they have been a bad franchise.
Yeah, but at least you do have the Super Bowls, I mean, which is nice.
And it's fair, but you know what? I hear the Yankees fans complain all the time. They go to the ALCS or the ALDS, and it's like, oh, we can't get it done. The Giants they win 3 games a year. So, yes, I have 4 Super Bowls to show for it that stretch back from 86 to 2011. But still, at what point can I get annoyed that it's not looking good now?
I think you're at the point. I mean, I think you're at
I'm at the point, but I hear, oh, don't, it's unfair. You act like that. You've had 4 Super Bowls. So now it's just a forever pass. It's a hall pass that goes on for eternity because they've won 4 Super Bowls in my lifetime.
No, but I think that's partly what got you in a bit of a trouble in the predicament that you're in now, though, is because you won that, you know, you won those championships. It's, I mean, there's not a lot of teams that are willing to do what Bill Belichick does in New England and just say, you know what, it's time to move on. Like, I mean, he realized that, listen, Tom Brady at 43 years old, I mean, if last year we were talking about we can't be the team that we need to be because he's not surrounded by enough with enough talent, I can't surround him in one offseason with enough talent to make us a Super Bowl team. So I might as well pull the Band-Aid off now and let him move on and, you know, see what I get with Jared Stidham or, you know, pick up Cam Newton and kind of restart this thing. A lot of teams aren't willing to do that. A lot of franchises aren't willing to do that.
We saw the Giants would do with Eli Manning. I mean, listen, everyone that watched Eli Manning, 90% of the people, outside of having been great and had tremendous moments in his career with the organization, looked at him and said, he's not the same quarterback and he's not going to lead you to the promised land. Yet the Giants brass either A, believed it, or B, were so blinded by their affection for him that they refused to move on. That's a bad job, Rick. I'm sorry. It's a bad job by that organization.
No, it's a terrible job, and I think that's exactly what you saw. It's not if, I think it is exactly what happened.
Which is which? You thought he was still good, or he was so good for you in the past that you thought that he bought himself more time?
It was how John Mara felt about Eli Manning. I think you saw that when, you know, what happened with McAdoo. I mean, when he benched Eli Manning, that was it for Ben McAdoo. And the way that the fan base responded, that was it for Ben McAdoo. John Mara loved Eli Manning. It was going to give him every opportunity to make one last run at it.
Well, let's be honest. A large reason the Giants are where they are is because they loved Eli Manning so much that they would do whatever it took to try to force winning with him. It's why they took Saquon Barkley. It's why they made a ton of the moves they made. It's why they stuck with Eli for way too long, and it's why they are where they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he went out and spent all that money on Solder. He got, Amame. I mean, you made a bunch of moves to try to win now, and unfortunately you didn't win now. And you felt like because you weren't winning, it felt like you'd already start rebuilding, but you really weren't in a full-blown rebuild yet. So you set your rebuild back a couple years.
Where do you think the Giants are as far as the rebuild is now? Like levels? Like they've bottomed out and they're on the way up, in your mind?
Yeah, I'd say they probably they bottomed out and they're on their way up.
But there's still a long way to travel up the mountain.
Yeah, there's still a long way. But your division is terrible.
Have the Jets bottomed out yet?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. How could it get any worse, man?
We say that all the time, and it manages to, though.
You're a 19.5-point dog against the Kansas City Chiefs right now. And that's because for some reason people put money on the Jets. Because I just think that they feel like Kansas City is just going to take their foot off the gas at a certain point. It's bad. And then you're going to start. I mean, now you're going to start fresh with a new head coach and a new rookie quarterback. You wasted 2 years is what you did. I mean, that's what
three.
We've done. We wasted.
Well,
I
three.
Mean, but you really wasted the two because you let McCagnan spend the money and then make the draft picks and then you fired him. That was the big.
Yes.
The huge mistake.
Yeah. A monumentally franchise altering mistake.
There's no excuse for that.
If you went to like how to build a franchise 101 in the first day of college, they would say, whatever you do, don't do that.
Yeah, or whatever you do, don't do what the Knicks have done. Like let Phil Jackson pick Frank Ntilikina and then fire him. And then you turn around in the same city and do the exact same thing.
It's awful. It really is franchise malpractice.
Yeah, and Sam Darnold is ultimately going to be the one that pays the price for it because he's going to be on a new team and then you're going to draft a new quarterback. And now Sam's going to have to do what Ryan Tannehill did, is, you know, find the right spot and then, you know, hopefully resuscitate his career and reach the potential that we all believe he has. Because, I mean, there are so many people that I listen to. You know I listen to everything. I was listening to Jordan Palmer, who works with Sam, he works with Josh Allen, he works with all these quarterbacks during the offseason. He said he gets phone calls during these games, like people feeling bad for Sam Darnold, saying, like, you realize that Sam is better than a lot of these guys in the league that are having success, but he's in such a brutal situation that you don't get to see it.
Yeah, and I believe that's true. If you said to me, rank the quarterbacks based on what they can potentially do, I mean, I don't think Sam is a bad quarterback. I actually think if he goes into a Pittsburgh or a New Orleans or a franchise like that, I actually think he's going to be a good quarterback. And I think it's going to drive you insane that you're going to watch Sam Darnold succeed somewhere else, and the only reason he didn't succeed here is because you guys completely messed it up from get-go.
Yeah, that's fully what I expect to happen. Like, I've already resigned myself to the fact that's exactly what's going to happen. Because, I mean, I've said this the entire time. It felt like if there was a checklist of ways to ruin a young quarterback, they were just checking a box, like just slowly going right down the list, check that box. We'll check that box. And it's what exactly what they've done.
It's bad. I mean, I don't know. I don't. There's no two ways about it. What they have done to him is awful. Because I really believe that he will be the next Ryan Tannehill. I really do. That he's going to go to a situation with a good offensive line and a good offensive mind and decent weapons, and all of a sudden you'll watch him and be like, wow, he's good. The only difference is it really surprised me with Tannehill. It won't surprise me with Sam Darnold. When he does it, I'll be like, yep, this is exactly what I expected.
Yeah, and I mean, he's more talented than Ryan Tannehill was or is. I mean, Ryan Tannehill was not. I mean, he was a wide receiver, like a. I mean, Sam Darnold at USC, I mean, what you saw in that Rose Bowl, people were like, oh, my God, this kid's got unbelievable amount of talent. Look at his size. Look at his athleticism. And now he comes here, and it's like he's not a good quarterback. He's not good. Like, he's turned into a less-than-average quarterback.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
But has he turned in, or have the Jets turned him into this? That's my question. I don't – if you had to place blame, I don't place a ton of blame on him. I really don't. I mean, he's never done this before. Look at who's his best receiver been? His best weapon has been since he's been here.
Jamison Crowder.
Okay. Jamison Crowder is a what? Is an average wide receiver?
I mean, he's probably a good third option.
Okay. So his first option, I mean, it's supposed to be Quincy Enunwa. He can't stay on the field. Every step of the way, there's a problem. So you explain it to me.
No, I can't. I mean, it's the recipe to have this happen. What you did to this kid is exactly what, I mean, you would expect to happen. There aren't a lot of guys out there walking the face of this earth that are good enough to just step into a dysfunctional situation like this and actually put a team on their back at a young age and carry a team. It doesn't happen. Like, I don't think, you can say what you want, I don't think if Pat Mahomes was drafted by the New York Jets, he would be anywhere close to the Pat Mahomes we see now.
I never agreed with you with that, and I think I do now. Because I always thought that talent will win out. I always thought that if you're just that immensely talented, wherever you go, you're going to find a way. And I still think that there's some of that, but I don't believe that talent always wins out now. I mean, look what the Jets have done with this kid. Look what happened to Tannehill in Miami. I feel the same way with Daniel Jones. I mean, if the Giants go 2-14 and they move on from Daniel Jones, I believe that if he goes to a better situation, a real situation, he could be a really good NFL quarterback. No, I don't think it's as dire and extreme as it is right now with Sam Darnold, but I think the jury's still out with Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I think the jury's still out, but I mean, he's another one that gets put into a situation where he's replacing a legend, and I think he did a hell of a job doing that in his rookie year. I thought he was great.
But can you guarantee me as we approach the end of his second or midway through his second year that he's going to be the Giants quarterback next year?
No, you can't, but I think that's just the thought process with young quarterbacks right now is that, like, because there are a lot of options, it seems like coming out of school, that you feel like I need to instantly see this guy have success to buy into it, and you neglect the fact that, I mean, there's not a lot around Daniel Jones. There really isn't. I mean, his offensive line is awful. The left tackle you drafted with the fourth overall pick isn't very good. I mean, it's not. And I get it. I mean, he's his own worst enemy sometimes because of the turnovers and everything else, which has to stop. But, I mean, the Giants aren't the only team. The Jets have done it. And you saw, I mean, the Washington football team, they're not even dressing Dwayne Haskins. He's done.
No, I don't think he'll ever play there again. But here's the thing. You're the Giants. You want to be compared to the Jets? You want to be compared to the Washington football team? I mean, these are the two of the most dysfunctional franchises in all of football.
No, I get it. I mean, but at a certain point, I mean, you have to have some conviction, right? Like, you drafted this kid sixth overall. He had a good rookie year. Like, you have to stand by this kid. But again, I think you get into one of those situations because you don't win a lot of football games that now all of a sudden, because you are so bad, now you're given the option. If you have another high draft pick, it's like, okay, now what do I do? Like, if you were winning games, you wouldn't even have that option to even consider taking a Justin Fields.
Nope.
But now you might.
You might. There's a real chance that we might wind up with the top two quarterbacks available in this draft in this city next year, which honestly, from both these franchises, is an utter embarrassment.
Yeah, because if you're not selling winning, you're selling hope. That's what you're selling. And a lot of these, I mean... In life in general, I mean, you're as loyal as your options. So if all of a sudden now I got the second or third pick with a chance to take Justin Fields, now that's a legitimate conversation to have. As opposed to if you won five or six games, you wouldn't that conversation wouldn't exist because you're not trading up to draft Justin Fields. You wouldn't do that.
No. No, if you're the Giants and you draft, you know, if you win four games and you draft sixth, you're gonna stick with Daniel Jones. But if you win two games and you draft second, I think the debate is there. Do you go with Justin Fields or do you stick with Daniel Jones? Because let's remember as well, Gettleman, odds are not going to be here. Joe Judge came in here and inherited Daniel Jones. This was not his quarterback.
Yeah, and it's a reset. I mean, drafting a young quarterback, it's a reset. You're resetting your fan base's expectations.
No, but then you take two steps back again.
No, I get it.
And listen, if it's the right move, it's the right move. If the Giants look at it and Joe Judge and the new GM and the ownership look at it and say, look, we like Daniel Jones. We just think that Fields is a far superior quarterback and that's the direction we have to go in, then that's what we'll do. And I'll be on board with it, but it's franchise malpractice is what it is.
That's exactly what it is. But again, it's resetting the expectations from your fan base, though. Like your expectations of the Giants going into year three of Daniel Jones are going to be a lot different than going into year one of Justin Fields. Like, by nature, you're like, oh, he's a rookie quarterback. He'll make some mistakes.
Of course. Because you would think if you continue to head in the right direction next year under Daniel Jones, if it is still him, would be a 500-ish year. If you have to reset and go back and it's Justin Fields, I mean, you got to think that there's going to be growing pains. You're going to win three or four games or maybe five games yet again because you started from scratch yet again.
And that's part of the reason that you would do it. Is because that would excite your fan base. I would imagine. I mean, Justin Fields, I mean, you watch him play at Ohio State. That would excite me. The kid's legit.
It's a stud.
It's the same reason why the Jets would draft Trevor Lawrence. Because they're not selling. They've been awful. When they're not selling any winning, you reset the money. And on top of it, you got, you know, what's supposed to be a generational talent at quarterback to give the hope to the fan base again. Because you've beat the hope out of us.
Yeah, so, but again, and I know the Jets are at you know, stage one to begin with, but you start all over again.
Yeah, but we already did start all over.
But how many times can you start all over again and again and again and again?
Well, this has to be the last time. Like seriously, if you draft Trevor Lawrence, whoever they hire has to be there has to be some continuity. Like he has to be the one that's going to develop Trevor
Lawrence. He's going to be great. And I think everybody knows that he's going to be a star NFL quarterback. But Rick, there's got to be that little bit in your mind that says he's going to be great. I trust him implicitly, but we're still the Jets. And if any team could find a way to mess this thing up with him, it's going to be us.
You know what my bigger concern than that is because that, I mean, you said that, you know that's the truth, is they find a way not to get the first overall pick.
I mean, you'd have to win a game.
No, I get it. But I mean, that would be the Jetsiest thing to do is you have this, you know, once in a lifetime since Andrew Luck generational talent and you somehow screw it up and don't get a chance to draft him.
Oh, my God. It's bad. It's really, really bad. All right. So we'll get to the calls in a moment. Rick, a little new ownership for the Mets. Looks like we are an I away from being dotted and a T away from being crossed for Steve Cohen to run the New York Mets.
Yeah, let's just get it dotted. Let's get those T's crossed. That's what we all want. Let's make it happen.
And there's all these negative people who are out there like, oh, De Blasio is going to say it's not allowed to be done, or MLB owners are going to say this thing's going to get done. It's only a matter of when.
You can feel that. I mean, you know. I mean, you feel the same way. I mean, you're putting on a like this tough guy routine, but you feel the same way. Like there's that little piece in you that's like why even have this as a conversation right now? What are we trying to do?
No, I think this is done. I'm not concerned.
Yeah, this is a foregone conclusion, man. Could you imagine the level of outrage if this doesn't get approved for whatever reason, or if Bill de Blasio doesn't sign off on the transfer of Citi Field? Like, come on, man. This is going to happen. Steve Cohen is going to be the next owner of the Mets. It makes too much sense for all parties involved. Like, this is a positive step forward for Major League Baseball, for the Mets franchise, for the game itself. Like, to have a major market team being able to operate with the kind of capital, the resources that Steve Cohen can bring to the table, I mean, you're talking about another potential juggernaut in the landscape of Major League Baseball.
And what would be the rationale behind de Blasio not approving it? He's never been convicted of anything, and I know there are people that say he's a bad guy, and I don't know if that's true, but he's never been convicted of anything.
Well, he hasn't been convicted of anything, but he's had to pay a lot of fines to the SEC.
Okay.
So, I, listen, I, again, Dave, you know, New York City has something to say about the lease agreement with Citi Field. So, I mean, it seems like it's more of a procedural thing than anything else. It's something that has to happen, but it feels like the stars are aligning for all of these boxes to get checked and Steve Cohen to take over the team.
I can't
see how it could be a negative from any way you look at it.
No. Seems like Jerry Reinsdorf is going to do everything in his power to not allow Steve Cohen to get his hands on the Mets, though, huh?
He's going to relax. I mean, stop. I mean,
it doesn't matter, though. I mean, you got the necessary votes, right? He's going to get 22 out of the 29 other owners to vote for him, so it's going to happen.
Give Fred Wilpon a break, all right? I mean, come on.
Did you see that he sent a note around? The Wilpon sent a note around basically as a big goodbye?
Yeah, they had a Zoom meeting. Just say goodbye.
Yeah.
This is a fresh start, man. New lease on life. Just wait, Dave. We got all these. I mean, we got deep pockets all of a sudden now.
Come on, you gotta be excited.
I couldn't be more excited.
Right. Good.
I don't like to touch the money, though. See it approved first, and then all of a sudden we take over the town. Up there in Yankees territory, all they do is disappoint their fan base. All of a sudden Steve Cohen jumps in.
Please, yeah. All they do is go to the ALCS every year. How disappointing that must be. Please.
We got all this talent. Find a way to actually get the most out of it. This is a good time, too, if you think about it. I mean, if you want to pull a positive out of what's going on in the world right now, when you get new ownership like this, it's got this kind of money. I mean, you may have the opportunity now with some of these teams that don't want to pay star players to poach a few guys here.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the star players you got to go after. Second of all, the star free agents you have to. Don't you have to make a splash in free agency?
I think he will. But like I'm more excited about the money he's going to spend in other places too. That the Wilpons didn't.
I'm excited about all of it. About the fact that he's going to spend money on scouting, back end of the organization, GM, the minor leagues, free agency, spend big money. I mean, really the Dodgers is what you should be.
Exactly.
We're going to try to put an elite farm system out there, and we're going to try to bring in the high-priced free agent. That's what you want.
Yeah, we're going to develop our own players, and then we can afford to keep our own players. And then we, if there's a free agent that we like, we can go out and spend the money to get that guy.
Very exciting.
To add on.
Very exciting. World Series on 98.7 ESPN presented by AutoZone. Catch all the action tonight after Carlin on 98.7 ESPN and the ESPN app. Now, I'm rooting for the Dodgers, but I will buy into your belief system tonight, Rick. And that is, I want to see more baseball. I'm rooting for the Rays to win Game 6.
I am too. I mean, that's exactly what you want to see. I want to see, give me Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton in a Game 7. I'll sign up for that right now. That's what you want.
Trevor Bauer send out that tweet over the weekend?
He just goes everywhere.
No, I'm just saying. He was just like, the baseball gods aren't going to deny us a Game 7 with Charlie Morton and Walker Buehler on the mound.
I would hope not.
That would be awesome.
Another chance to see Walker Buehler in those jeggings, I mean, would be tremendous.
He's terrific.
I don't know how he pitches in such tight pants. Like you could not get in tighter pants than Walker Buehler.
He's a skinny guy.
Yeah, but you could be skinny, but those are skin tight.
Yeah. Like he painted those things.
They're tighter than football pants?
You can see the pulse in his junk. These things are so tight.
Oh, dear. All right. Moving right along.
I don't know why I never noticed that or paid attention to it.
Please don't. continue to not notice and or pay attention.
The little things. Little things.
Yeah, why do you notice everything like this?
I don't know. I told you. I got problems. How many times do I need to tell you that? I got issues. I almost had an issue this morning. Look, I'm sitting here with a bag of ice. I had a real issue this morning that I was going to have to go to the hospital.
Do I want to ask what happened, or do I want to stay away
Probably
from it?
Probably not. I mean, it's junk. It's junkle related.
No. We'll move
on.
We made a bank full of
didn't
callers.
Listen to the wife.
Bankful. Let's go to the callers. I'm going to talk right over you. Go to the callers. Mike in Westbury. Mike, good morning. Lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I just wanted to touch on the Jets and Sam Darnold. Now, in regards to Sam, I know the Jets are, they're a disaster to say the least. But now, if you're the Jets, you have a solid quarterback. You have Sam Darnold. And like you guys said, you have a bunch of problems. If you do the right thing and you don't win a game and you get Trevor Lawrence with the number one pick, would you consider trading that and addressing other issues with the multiple draft picks you'd be getting for him?
Here's the problem with that, man. You don't answer the question of whether or not Sam Darnold is definitively your franchise quarterback. Like, if you're in position to draft Trevor Lawrence, you have the first overall pick. So I can't imagine that you would have seen something from Sam over these next nine games that would be able to answer the question in the affirmative. And if you can't do that, can you really pass on the upside that Trevor Lawrence brings to the table?
No. And financially, thanks for the call, Mike, right? You're at the point where you're going to have to start paying Sam Darnold. You refresh the whole thing if you bring in Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, but financially is secondary to whether or not you got the franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, if Trevor Lawrence is that good, I don't care how many draft picks you get in what positions you choose to address. However many it ends up being, will that equate to what you expect to get from Trevor Lawrence at the most important position in sports?
If you think Trevor Lawrence is Andrew Luck or John Elway, I don't know how you pass on him.
You have to take him.
You have to. There's no question about it. And according according to Feinbaum, he feels like Justin Fields is on that same level. Not quite as good, but in terms of being a generational talent, he feels like he's right up there as well. So if you're the Giants and you find yourself with the second overall pick, yeah, I think that's a consideration as well. Now, we'll see if they're willing to pull the plug on Daniel Jones only after two seasons, but if Justin Fields is right there staring you in the face, it'd be hard to turn down.
I think you have to, actually. Because think about this, Chris. If you have an opportunity to take Justin Fields, it means that you've won, what, two games, maybe?
Yeah.
So I have to think of the Giants are a two-win football team, that Daniel Jones has had a horrendous second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I got to take the new quarterback. I have to.
Yeah, I don't even think it's a question, Dave. And everybody's asking whether or not Daniel Jones can get the turnovers fixed. The one thing that gives me pause in trying to answer that question is the kid turned the ball over an awful lot at Duke. They had 30 interceptions down at Duke in 3 years starting. It's a lot of turnovers, man.
And it's all he does in the NFL. And again, so, I mean, he shows you moments of, hey, you know what? He looks good. Even during that Eagles game, I thought he played well. But, you know, his fault, receiver's fault, is always turnovers from him. Every single game, multiple turnovers. That can't
But you know what, Dave? That can't always be everybody else's fault.
That's my point.
You can't always
point the finger.
Especially when you have 34 turnovers in 20 games. It can't always be on somebody else. At some point, you have to be accountable for all of the giveaways. And regardless of what kind of talent the kid brings to the table, if he's giving the ball away at that rate, then it's going to make it hard for you to win football games and consistently be competitive.
Could not agree with you more. Let's go to Dave in Cranford. Dave, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Guys, man, good morning. Hey, listen to you all the time, but I just got some issues with it. It just seems like you're telling a little bit of a story this morning, you know, about the decisions of the Giants. The one that really got to me was holding on to Eli Manning. And here's the point. You have to understand the history of why John Mara held on to Eli. And that
why?
Was because Wellington. Because
Stop
Wellington.
It. Stop. You know what? It's enough already, Dave. The guy won you multiple Super Bowls. So he wasn't good anymore.
Yeah, but you don't know that, Dave.
I know it. I saw it. He wasn't good anymore.
Come on, man. Is Drew Brees good enough to win the Super Bowl right now? You don't know.
Probably
Drew Brees' team is in the playoffs every single year, though, Dave.
Totally
that's the difference.
Agree.
So, I mean, here's the thing.
Chris.
I'm not going to blame Eli Manning for what happened the last four or five seasons he was the quarterback of the Giants. Yeah, I'm not going to say that he was the problem, but Eli Manning certainly wasn't the answer. And I think that Giants ownership was – hold on, let me finish, Dave. I think Giants ownership was slow to admit that this team was in need of a rebuild, in need of an overhaul. And when you start to change things around, when you start to try to rebuild this thing from the ground up, you got to look at the quarterback position because that is a foundational piece. And Eli Manning was not going to be the quarterback for the Giants. When we go back to the 2013-2014 season, I think ownership should have realized, okay, if we're moving on from Tom Coughlin, then we probably need to reset things, and that includes taking a look at the quarterback position. And they didn't want to do that. And they thought that they could try to retool this thing on the fly, and it blew up in their face to the point where you've got the worst record in football over the last 3.5 seasons.
I've lived it every day, Chris. I know that. What I'm saying to you is that it's easy to look back on those decisions now.
No, Dave, you're wrong.
We said it when it was happening.
Exactly.
We talked about it when it was happening, Dave. This is not revisionist history. This is something that we said. We said if you're going to continue to lose football games, you might as well lose with the purpose of getting a young quarterback experience, because eventually that's going to benefit everybody around him. What's the point in marching Eli Manning out there in year 16 and continuing to have double-digit loss seasons? That didn't make any sense.
It took us to Kerry Collins to finally get somebody. That's the point.
What are you talking about?
I don't understand. What's the point? I don't get
the
point.
They moved on from Phil Sims too early. He should have stayed on for another couple years. And
they messed up with Phil Sims because they gave the job to Jeff Hostetler, is what they did originally with Sims.
Yes, they moved on. They cut Phil Sims too early.
But then Sims wound up as the starter again. And remember, they in 93, they lost to San Francisco, and then they moved on from Phil Sims.
Yeah, of course they did, but they would say it was too early. And they look back on that as a mistake, and it was too early.
They may look back at that as a mistake, but Eli Manning, they kept for too long. And there's no one in the world that could convince me otherwise.
Well, I mean, Dave, the proof is the record. That's all you got to look at. I don't think there's any more to it than that. You can go back and forth trying to debate whether or not they should have held on to Eli, but, I mean, look at Eli's record the last five or six seasons he was with the Giants. It's abysmal.
Bad. I mean, since you guys won the Super Bowl, which is what, February of 2012, is that right?
Yeah. So 2012, they had a 9-7 season, and then it was downhill from there. 7-9, 6-10, 6-10. They had the 1-11-5 year where Jerry Reese went and spent $200 million on the defensive side of the ball in free agency.
Which equated to zero playoff wins.
Zero playoff wins. Yep. You know, that was the boat trip and the fiasco in Green Bay. Then they went 3-12, 5-11, and now 1-3.
Bad.
I mean, yeah, you can't afford to sprinkle in 3-13 seasons.
Sprinkle them in. This is the constant now.
No, I know. But, I mean, that's to his point about Drew Brees. I mean, is Drew Brees the same quarterback? No, he's not. But because of, you know, how this team was built around him, because of Sean Payton, I mean, they're a team that's won, you know, over the last couple of years, 11, 13, and 13.
Yes, that's the difference.
And have
that's
been a bad call away from moving on in the postseason in consecutive seasons.
And their offense
or Drew Brees' interception away from moving on in the postseason.
And even in seasons where they're like 7-9, when you look at their offense is still one of the best in football.
There's still the productivity there.
Yeah, the defense stinks. I mean, those seasons the defense stunk, but the offense was still great.
And they win games. I mean, you can't compare these two things. You got Eli winning 3, you got Drew Brees winning 13. You know what? If Eli's winning 13, you can roll the corpse out there.
It's been so bad, though, Dave, the last 3 years. 13 losses, 11 losses, 12 losses, already 6 losses through 7 weeks of the season. I mean, to say that the Giants, you know, to say that was a tough call to make, it really wasn't. It shouldn't have been.
Well, it was
if you're
them.
Making a decision on what's in the best interest of your football team moving forward.
It's just, that was just Hackfest. Hackfest 20.
I'll be back in a minute. I don't know what to say. Because if I blame Santiago, you're going to be like, how could you throw him under the bus?
I'm not going to be under the bus because it's not my fault.
Okay.
Let's give me some credit too for battling through that.
We're still in segment. If I need your mic to be down, I will bring it down and talk to you.
That's not in segment.
You couldn't.
That's not in segment. The segment was over. I threw it to Rick.
Rick was doing an in segment read, wasn't he?
It's an in segment read.
I'm done. He knows I'm done. Pots us down. He should pot the both of us down.
What if I want to incorporate you into the read?
Why would I have you? You've never once incorporated me
Who
into
knows?
The read.
Maybe I want to bring you into Fansville. Okay, have some Dr. Pepper.
That's a lie. You've been incorporated.
I don't know if his bladder can handle any Dr.
Pepper. Duty called. I had to go to the bathroom. I'm not apologizing to anybody.
That's a Nick Foles level lie.
Not apologizing to anybody. Had to go to the bathroom. You can laugh all you want. Thank God I didn't say something really bad. I mean, if you didn't pot him down, you could hear God knows what.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I don't say anything during the breaks.
I mean, God knows what you could
say. I go downstairs to take care of the baby.
You could be on air and you're going to say it. In the break, God knows where we could go.
I don't wait till the break.
That's true. There is no filter. Let's bring him in. You want to be put in a good mood?
Of course.
Listen to this. Andy and Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Hey, Rick. Hey, Chris. Don't tell Dave. I snuck out of the basement. Road trip up to the beautiful 416, the city of Toronto with a four-pack of NBA Raptors questions for you guys.
So you, I mean, well introduced. We're going four Raptors questions today.
And I don't want to hear any whining. They've only been around 25 years. Your entire adult life knows the Raptors. Ready, David and boys?
I got to be honest, I'm already turned off by this topic.
This is random as hell, yeah. Andy.
I could not be more
plus,
turned
off. Plus, the border is closed. I don't know how you got into Toronto.
You can't get up to Toronto.
You can't even get into Toronto.
I hooked up with Michelle Scalise at Security Dodge. Took a Jeep Grand Cherokee all the way up right through the border. It was beautiful. All right, question number one. What Arizona point guard was the first ever draft pick for
Damon
the Raptors?
Damon Stoudemire.
See, Mighty Mouse. One. Boom. Done. DeMar DeRozan was the first-round pick, ninth overall in 2009 of these Raptors. What college did he go to?
USC.
Bang! Bang!
What's up, Trojan? Two for two. The Raptors have had only one number one overall pick. Who was it?
What are you laughing about?
What's up, Trojan?
you were too much. The top overall. That's got to be the great Andrea Bargnani. Bargnani,
number
whatever his name is.
77 himself.
Yeah, great.
And finally, only one time have the Raptors drafted a player from Dave's adopted school, Georgetown. Name this Hoya who never played for the Raptors.
Oof, I don't think I know.
Come on, this is Georgetown. How would you
I don't
know?
Well, he never even played for them.
Yeah, but he played for Georgetown.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I know who he is.
He was traded for Jermaine O'Neal.
I mean, I have
2008.
2008. I mean, the only one I can think of is Sweetney, but it's not going to be Sweetney.
Oh, I know it
is. Is it Patrick's son?
No.
Is it Roy Hibbert?
Roy Hibbert's right. Hey. There you go.
Yeah, baby.
Fellas, let's be careful out there, especially north of the border, and always stay healthy, boys.
All right. That's
stay out of the brass rail, Andy.
Terrific. Andy. All right, let's bring him on. One of our favorites. I think he actually did well in the power rankings last week when we ranked our favorite guest. That is the glorious, sensational Mike Tenenbaum. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning. I'm glorious and hydrated and happy to be with you guys.
Hydration is a key, as you of course know. We'll get into that a little bit later during the course of this spot. So, Mike, I was so upset, as you, I'm sure, could imagine on Friday morning. I mean, the Giants had that game. It was on the verge of being over, and they handed it away. So, you know, we get a lot of, well, you know, they're so competitive and they're doing well, and you can see that they play for Joe Judge. But you of course, understand the other side of it, right? Like, 21-10, 6 minutes to go. A win, and you're now tied for first place, and in fact, technically, I think in first place if you actually win that game, and it all falls apart. So, I mean, what are you supposed to feel if you're a Giants fan? I would think anger would be the number one thing that you would emote if you're a Giants fan now, no?
Yeah, and again, we talked about this last week. Here's the tough evaluation for me if I'm the Giants, which is Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is really an enigma because you could put together a tape of 20 to 30 plays that you would say you have a front line, high character, productive NFL quarterback, but in the most consequential moments, he's turning the ball over. And one of the things that I'm sure is keeping Joe Judge up at night is, you know, how does he handle that? Because when you're a head coach, and Chris knows this, and Rick from being in locker rooms, you watch the head coach and you go by what he does and you hold him accountable by his actions. And if he allows a guy to keep turning the ball over and keeps allowing him to play, it's going to hurt his credibility, and Joe's a young guy. He has a chance to be a good coach, but at some point, those turnovers are killing this team, and he's the guy that ultimately is going to have to sit him down at some point.
Yeah, but Mike, at this point, right, the team's won one game. Isn't it more important? And I get exactly what you're saying. I agree 100%, but in this situation, isn't it more important for Joe Judge to find out if Daniel Jones is going to be the franchise quarterback moving forward, and if he can clean up the turnovers? Because you may have the option to take a Justin Fields in this year's draft if you continue to lose.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. But again, you could also develop somebody by sitting them down. And, you know, candidly, that's what we're seeing, you know, down the road with Washington, which is again, I thought what Ron Rivera did, guys, is absolutely fascinating, which is he did not bench Dwayne Haskins. He made him the third string. And again, that tells me something else happened about how hard he's working or something else happened. And all I'm saying is you could keep developing Daniel Jones, but you may have to develop him for a couple of weeks from the bench, because if you don't, you're saying his conduct and his performance is acceptable.
Mr. T, Andrew Thomas struggled again on Thursday night, gave up a couple of sacks, multiple pressures. I mean, he's really swimming at the left tackle spot. And we saw a couple of weeks ago when he sat down for the one game because he was late to meetings, Matt Parrott stepped in and performed well. If you're Joe Judge, how do you handle that situation with Andrew Thomas struggling and somebody that's on the bench that seems to be able to perform a little bit better?
Yeah, and Chris, you know, as a former defensive lineman, you know, everybody else is watching tape, and when other defensive linemen see that, you know, it's sharks in the water, and they're smelling blood. I think you got to live with the growing pains a little bit longer. And again, the only thing I would say in Andrew Thomas's defense, and we've talked about this a bunch, guys, is no off-season program, no training camp, and Andrew Thomas has a ton of ability, but he's not strong enough right now. And when you can't anchor and sit on a bull rush, you have no chance. And look, it looks like to me, watching him, guys, he lacks confidence. And when that happens, it's really hard to play left tackle. So I think it's a grade of incomplete in terms of the Giants picking him. You know, he needs time to develop. But, yeah, he may be another guy that may have to sit down for a little bit and maybe accelerate his weightlifting. He has to get stronger. But, you know, you can see a lot of the attributes of why the Giants picked him.
Mr. T, and I know it's early in the process. You're only talking about Andrew Thomas playing six games. But he struggled more than the tackles that were taken after him. Like, Mekhi Becton has shown better for the Jets. Jedrick Wills has played better for the Browns. Is Andrew Thomas struggles, you know, another indictment on Dave Gettleman's record?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly wouldn't say that publicly if you're them, but boy, that's something, you know, we all do in this business, which is you look at the position you take in the draft and then you compare it to players picked a little bit above and a little bit below, and that's just the reality of it. And Becton certainly looks better at this point. He's a massive human being, and certainly when you look at worse, it's a very fair point. So, look, I just think it's early. You have to give it a little bit more time to develop, but I could see why, you know, Giant fans would be, you know, somewhat concerned.
So, I'm Mike Tenenbaum with us, 98.7 ESPN. I hate to belabor this, but obviously it's huge, fourth overall selection. Are we on the verge where you could see this as a bust, Mike, or is this, you
relax,
know,
would you please
no,
stop?
No. I want to ask him a question. Because Chris has his good point of all these other guys are far superior right now. Mekhi Becton looks all world at left tackle, and this guy was picked before any of them. I mean, how concerned should you be? Like, is there real chance in your mind that this could completely blow up and he could be a bust? Or do you think that the circumstances dictate that, you know what, you didn't have a real training camp, you had no preseason, he's been thrust into left tackle where he probably shouldn't have been, and that's the reason for all these struggles?
You know, Rick, you know what's so funny about what Dave is saying? It's like when you're on Get It with Greeny, and Greeny uses the line of, you know, we're all just professional overreactors. I mean, the guy's been in the NFL now for 10 minutes. If Rickashaw Ferguson played for 12 years, you know, like, I can't tell you what he did his first six games. So let's just hope it works out. I think it's way too soon to call him a bust. But here's what is important, guys. And to me, this goes a little bit back to the Haskins decision, which is there's a great expression that applies here, which is this. The tape sets the floor. The baseline talent sets the floor. Character sets the ceiling, meaning how hard is Andrew Thomas going to work? So if I'm seeing progress and I'm stacking one good day on top of the next, I can live with the inconsistencies. If he's not working his tail off, that's a different story. So from all the research I did, when I scouted Andrew Thomas, he's a great kid, comes from a really good high school program. He was impeccable at Georgia. I'm sure the Giants did their homework. And that, to me, is going to tell the tale of Andrew Thomas at the end of the day.
Mike Tenenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike, you know, I mean, expectations have ruined so many young players' careers. And he had high expectations because of what Chris and Dave mentioned, the fact that they had their choice of the offensive tackles, and they chose Andrew Thomas. Speaking of disappointment, Mike, who do you blame for what's going on in Dallas right now?
Yeah, I think it goes back to Jerry Jones, and to me it goes back to 2 years ago. You know, they re-signed very average players, people like Lael Collins, Jalen Smith was playing really well, and they let Byron Jones go. Byron Jones is a really good corner who's playing really well for the Dolphins. And I think this is, you know, you can make the argument that the MVP of the NFL right now is Dak Prescott. Every week he doesn't play, his value shows up more and more. And it's, you know, when you look at their back seven, they're awful. You know, Sean Lee and Van Der Esch, you know, have never been healthy. Jalen Smith isn't the same guy. And then you look at guys like Wormley on the outside. They took Trayvon Diggs in the second round. He's been inconsistent. Anthony Brown's not the athlete that Byron Jones is. So they're going to struggle on defense, and they may be the worst team in the division.
Mr. T, I want to flip over to the Jets real quick. There are reports out there that Joe Douglas is proactive in shopping Quinnen Williams before the deadline. What would be the point of the Jets trading a guy that they used the third overall pick on a couple of years ago?
Guys, you could carve this in slate. Like, I would be shocked if they would trade Quinnen Williams. That would make no sense whatsoever. I know there's a lot of rumors. And what happens sometimes this time of year, guys, especially in the New York market, is Team X calls and says, hey, would you trade Quinnen Williams? And Joe Douglas says, yeah, if you give me 3 ones and 3 twos and a franchise player, yeah, I'll trade Quinnen Williams. Now, all of a sudden, you know, Quinnen Williams is part of, like, trade rumors. So, look, a week from today, 4 o'clock, he'll be a Jet. And if he's not, I would just be absolutely floored.
All right, Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So you asked about Quinnen Williams. How about the Giants? And I think specifically, and I've heard that he's not going to be dealt, and I find it very surprising because, I mean, he's really disappointed. And it's Evan Engram. I mean, you got to catch that pass. He helped the interception turnover by not extending two arms. He's fallen over. He's had a really, really tough career with the Giants. And I think a change of scenery would probably help him. But my understanding is he's not going to be dealt. And so it's kind of a two-part question. A, should you? B, would you? And C, do you think the Giants are going to be active moving forward here with the trade deadline a week away?
Yeah, I would, you know, and I think one of the criticisms of me in my career, which was fair, is I was probably a little bit more patient on some guys. And again, Ingram's really a talented guy. They're hard to find. His blocking needs to be dramatically better, and that was a massive drop, obviously. But I wouldn't give up on him quite yet. The guy I would trade if I was them is Golden Tate. I think Golden Tate, you know, let's look at Cleveland. They just lost OBJ for the year. And I don't think Golden Tate's going to be on this team in 2 years anyway. So if I could get, you know, a third-round pick out of Cleveland for Golden Tate, I would certainly consider that if I was the Giants. And I would just pour a lot of resources. Look, that's why you're paying Jason Garrett. Like, Jason Garrett, get Andrew Thomas better. Get Daniel Jones playing more consistently. Get Evan Engram to clean up these drops. Like, that's what you're paying your coaching staff for. So I think it's easy just to discard the player, but I would, you know, make the accountability start with the coaches.
I'd give up a second-round pick for a Golden Tate. I'll tell you that right now.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Mike Tannen.
I mean, that's all I can do.
Why do you even have to?
that's all I can do. I'm sorry. You know what it's like? It's like when you go out with your kids and they do things, and you're like, oh, you know, little Timmy's done it again. I'm sorry, Mike, that he's done it again.
Just,
I apologize.
Did you just call me little Timmy?
Yeah, pretty much.
Little Timmy?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, man. All right, Mike.
This is my week.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike, when you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, do you feel like now it's safe to say that this right now, as we sit today, is the most complete team in the NFC?
I'll tell you a step further. You know who's the executive of the year in the NFL? It's Tom Brady. Look at all the guys he signed, right? Leonard Fournette, LeSean McCoy, Rob Gronkowski. Oh, let's throw in an Antonio Brown here for a little, you know, security blanket. And here's the thing that's really interesting to me. So Tom Brady is going to leave New England. That story's been written. But the story that, to me, doesn't get enough credit here is Todd Bowles, which is this. If I'm Tom Brady, I know I won't have a chance to win a championship. And if I'm looking at all these different places I could go, and we all know, you know, all the teams he looked at in the spring, he correctly evaluated how good that Tampa Bay defense is. And, you know, we're going to be talking about Eric Bieniemy in the coming weeks and the hot candidates, but I'd put Todd Bowles up there with any of them. Guy's been a coach in the league. Jets have not done well since he's left. And that defense, to me, that is a championship defense. And now you have Tom Brady, who will make good decisions. And, man, I'll tell you what, I just feel really good about where they are. And I think they're going to be really, really hard to beat.
Mr. T, I want to ask you about the Chicago Bears. Last night, Brian Griese brought up something during the broadcast that was told to him by Nick Foles during their pregame interview. He said that Nick Foles would get play calls from Matt Nagy and say that he didn't have time to execute those play calls. And after the game, reporters asked Nick Foles about it. He chalked it up to a miscommunication between him and Brian Griese. But I just – there's something off about that Chicago Bears offense. And I know that they made the tough decision to bench Trubisky and start Nick Foles. Doesn't really look like that's working out. I mean, where does this Bears offense go from here?
Yeah. And again, context is everything about that comment. You know, that could be, you know, mean a lot of things. It could be against certain teams or it's from within at this point. You know, I thought Coach Belichick, you know, I think we could always learn so much from him, and his postgame comments after they get waxed by the 49ers, it applies to the Bear offense, which is, look, we got to coach better and we got to play better, and we're going to concentrate on these three or four things, and that's going to give us our best chance to win. And if I was Chicago, to me, it really just starts with get the ball in the playmaker's hands, stop having penalties, and don't beat yourself. And if you do that, they do have players that can make plays in space. We saw it against Atlanta. And I think, you know, their answers have to come from within. Like, they're not going to be able to go out and get a better quarterback sitting here around Halloween. They got to go with what they have.
Yeah, it's not a good thing when you get a false start on a quarterback sneak. I don't know how that happens. But anyway.
Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, is Pittsburgh the best team in football right now?
I don't think so. I think it's Tampa Bay. I think it's
really?
Kansas City. Yeah, I do. Now, I will say this. You know, football fans need to get ready to understand and learn a name. Deontay Johnson came out last year, and he's a very underrated player. And the more he develops with Chase Claypool, Smith-Schuster, you know, they got Eric Ebron at tight end, obviously James Conner at running back. They're skill players. Like, nobody has corners that can match up if Deontay Johnson continues to develop. So, I think them in Tennessee are right there with Kansas City. I think Baltimore is maybe a little bit behind, and I put Tampa Bay in that conversation as well. My only concern about Pittsburgh is you got a guy who's 38 years old in Ben Roethlisberger, and at the end of the day, I'd rather go with a younger guy who may be a little bit more driven, like a Mahomes, a Lamar Jackson, and at some point, does his age catch up with him?
He does make some bad decisions, too. Like, Ben does make some really interesting decisions. Like, that throw he made into the end zone was...
Oh. Terrible.
It was not a great decision. Mike, last one before we let you go from me. You know, of the teams, potentially, yeah, of the teams that you just mentioned, which team do you expect to be most active trying to make a move? Like, of the top teams in the NFL, which team do you think is in need of a move the most?
Well, you know, I would have said Tennessee, like, with pass rush, but, again, like, they're not going to get somebody with more ability than Clowney. Like, I think they've already made that move. And we saw the same thing, obviously, with Baltimore adding Yannick Ngakoue. So I think from the standpoint, it kind of is what it is. I think what we'll see is if other players get cut or out there, like an Antonio Brown, like what I'm hearing from teams is it's a real moving target with these COVID sort of protocols. And no one's blaming anybody. It is what it is. It's a very insidious, obviously, virus that we're dealing with. But because the rules can constantly change, I think we're going to see – players just keep going on and off practice squads, like a Dez Bryant, like an Antonio Brown. So the trade deadline, in my opinion, is going to come and go, but we're going to see some of these transactions throughout the end of the year.
Mike, I want to revisit the Bucks and the Antonio Brown conversation because I think the mechanics of how a decision like that gets made is interesting. I mean, Bruce Arians a couple of months ago said that there was no chance that Antonio Brown would be joining that team. Obviously, he feels a way about him as a player, having been on a staff that had him on the team. Looking at Jason Light, how does he make the decision to add an Antonio Brown, knowing that the head coach might not necessarily be on board with it?
Yeah, so a couple of things, Chris. Every general manager in the NFL has one mathematical equation on their board, and that is this: production equals tolerance. So the only reason Antonio Brown's getting the amount of opportunities is he's that good, arguably top three receiver in the game. And here's the thing I would feel really good if I was the Buccaneers. This is Tom Brady. So on the field, off the field, he will handle everything with Antonio Brown. And the conversation with Antonio Brown is incredibly simple, Chris. It's really this simple. We're signing you. Screw what the contract says, Antonio. This is a one-day contract. And guess what? If today goes great, we're going to welcome you back to One Buck Place tomorrow, and you just need to stack one good day on top of the next. But the minute you're late, the minute you bitch, the minute you miss an assignment, we're having that conversation right now. This is your warning. This is your second chance. This is, I didn't know. So let's just stack one good day on top of the next. You're starting here with a clean record, but you don't have the benefit of the doubt. Are we clear? And then I would just move forward from there.
Mike, I have one more before I ask you about why you sound so youthful and energized. And that is, how close is Justin Fields to Trevor Lawrence in your mind?
Oh, I think there's a gap there. I really like Justin Fields. I think I told you guys the story. I was at training camp in the summer of 2019. I go to Ohio State, and Justin Fields goes by me. I'm like, I didn't know Cam Newton was here. This guy looks unbelievable. And the only thought that went through my mind, Dave, is how in the world does he not beat out Jacob Fromm at Georgia and needs transfer? Because Kirby Smart's a really good coach. This guy has a chance to be really good. I just think, in my opinion, I think Trevor Lawrence is that good, that special. And in any other year, I think, look, if it was a year ago, you know, certainly maybe not with Joe Burrow, but certainly with Kyle Murray, Baker Mayfield, you could have been talking about the first pick overall. He's a great kid. He is an unbelievable athlete. He's a really good thrower of the ball. He can make you miss. He can run you. He's a bigger guy than Murray, which I like. He's built bigger than Lamar Jackson. So he's going to be, for sure, top five pick, Dave, and he's a really, really intriguing prospect.
All right, Mike, now I'm going to ask you. You sound, I mean, youthful, energized, really top-notch. Why would that be?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Dave. I take X2 Performance every day. It's an all-natural, healthy, good-for-you natural energy drink, and I would advise you guys to check it out at x2performance.com.
All right, Mike, great stuff as always. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Tuesday, which is trade deadline day in the NFL. So good stuff. You
know, I know, guys, everyone else is talking about that other thing happening next Tuesday. I think it's like the election. I'm more excited about, you know, next Tuesday's the trade deadline.
Good stuff. Have a good week. We'll talk to you.
All right, guys. Thanks.
That, of course, is Mike Tannenbaum helping us as he always does.
Could I ask you guys? Could I ask you guys a silly question?
Yeah, how silly?
Well, it's not that silly. I mean, I was going to ask Mike, but I didn't want to. I'm trying to buck the trend of me saying it's my last question, then asking another question.
Mm-hmm. Well, why would you say that then? Why don't you just continue until you're out of questions?
Well, because I was out of questions until it just all of a sudden popped into my mind. I wanted to ask him the question. I mean, when you look at how good Green Bay is currently, right, in what they did in the draft, have you been able to make sense of what they did yet in the first two rounds?
No.
You drafted a running back who's your third string running back in the second round.
Right. And in fact, you started, couldn't even play the other day, and he wasn't the guy you went to.
No, you went to Jamal Williams, you don't even, Jordan Love didn't even dress. I mean, what did
bad.
You do?
It's bad. What they did was, I mean, you took a quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is a top three quarterback in the world right now.
You traded up.
Yeah, bad.
And then
bad.
You took a running back that doesn't even, I mean, he barely touches the ball.
Does Aaron Rodgers look like...
Has any franchise enjoyed stability at the quarterback position longer than Green Bay?
No.
Okay.
New York Jets.
They went from Favre to Rodgers.
But that's my point.
Yeah.
I guess that's their organizational philosophy. We're going to draft a quarterback before we need one. That way you don't reach for a quarterback.
They must love Jordan Love, but I don't know.
A lot of people love Jordan Love.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that people like it even better if you can afford to have the kid sit for a couple of years and learn behind one of the best to do it. So, I mean, I know it doesn't feel good for the 2020 season, and it doesn't seem like you're going to be able to take advantage of the twilight of Aaron Rodgers' career, but what you do guarantee is that your franchise will always be relevant and consistently competitive, which is more than we can say for the two local teams.
Oh,
who are who still have a question mark at the quarterback position.
We're the anti-Packers here in New York. What they do, we do the opposite of that. They win
13 games. Some would call us the unpackers.
Yeah, that's true. we take the clothes out and just put them on the bed.
Yeah, unpacking a coach's office one after the other.
Yep. All right, today just got a little more exciting because you have the chance to win a $116 million with Powerball. Talk about a way to really shake things up. So keep it interesting and take your shot because anything can happen in Jersey. Rick, the question is, CMT is coming up next, correct?
That is correct.
Will you be taking hot sauce and putting it in your eyes when you do participate in CMT?
I will, yeah. I've had some other hot sauce issues I can't really share on the air, but hot sauce has been known to be a little bit of a problem.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
Like that?
Guy giving a press conference and puts hot sauce in his eye?
No, I've never seen anything like that.
Oh, that was wonderful.
And of course it's the Cowboys.
Of course.
Of course it happened to the Cowboys.
I can't talk right now. I got hot sauce in my eye.
He tried to battle through it for a second. He's like, excuse me. No, I can't do it anymore.
No,
I can't make that up, though. You just can't make it up. Tabasco sauce? Come on, man.
No. You cannot make it up.
obviously the frustration for him as well is just, you know, look, when he misses them, nobody, whoops, excuse me, now I got something in my eye. Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good. Oh, it's terrible. Jeez. I'm sorry.
All right, we're back. Jory, I guess.
Forgive me, I'm sorry. And I don't remember the question. If you give it to me again.
Yeah, what is happening? Oh, my God. Your quarterback is concussed to the point that you've never seen before. Nobody protects him. The team is falling apart. You're 2-5. And the defensive coordinator is having a press conference, and he gets hot sauce in his eye?
How could you ever take your DC seriously after that moment?
You can't.
You can't take him seriously. You already thought he's unprepared.
And that doesn't happen to, like, there's no way that would happen to the Packers or the Niners. Or, you know, when things are falling out of control, it happens to you there. And that's the Cowboys. That's the 2020 Cowboys right there.
Yeah, and Stephen Jones gave Mike McCarthy an endorsement, which feels like the kiss of death now in today's NFL. Like, we have full confidence that this is the guy for the job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Johnson said that about Adam Gase, calling him a genius after week one in Buffalo. How's that working out?
Well, it could be a
genius. Not well.
Could be a genius.
Bad for Adam Gase, great for Dowell Loggins. Just call the plays now. Don't you have to, at that point, don't you almost have to battle through it and maybe use it to your benefit? Like, take the question and create your own response. It's like you're like emotional with how bad things are.
But your eye is burning.
No. Yeah, but you just fight through it. I feel so bad for Andy Dalton. Like, just pretend like you're crying or something.
Mike, why are you so upset? Very upsetting.
Yeah, that's my quarterback.
Dak and now Dalton.
That's my quarterback.
Battle through having hot sauce in your eye?
Yeah, I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, I don't.
Your eye's burning.
I think you got to try.
Your eye is burning.
I wouldn't have gave the explanation as to why my eye is burning. Just say, excuse me for a moment. Telling them that you got Tabasco on your fingers and it got your eye. That's overshare right there. We didn't need to know all that. That just makes
so you
seem
just
even that much more ridiculous.
Excuse me, I'm having major eye issue.
I got something in my eye. I'll be back. Okay, yeah. Cool. Everybody understands that. But when you say it's Tabasco, yeah.
Surprised you didn't tell you. I was having tamales for lunch.
Or you like break that. I mean, you make it a joke. I was just breaking down the Washington tape. Hurt my eye a little bit. Hurts my eyes a little bit. Something.
Then you're throwing your players under the bus.
Yeah, that's just, you know what? I'm having a moment, and I'll be back. DCR brought to you by your local Honda dealers. Contact one for a great deal today. All right, if you'd like to participate in CMT, tweet your three categories at Rothenberg ESPN, and the good ones may just make it on air. But until then, Rick, the floor is yours.
All right, here we go, fellas. Tuesday edition of Cut Up, Marry, Trash. In honor of the great Mike Nolan, I'm going to ask you this. Cuddle, Marry, Trash. Tabasco, Cholula, or Frank's Red Hot?
So it's Tabasco.
Cholula. Or Frank's Red Hot?
Well, so this is the one I would most prefer to be in my eye?
No, in your mouth. This is not in your eye. I would rather none of those in my eye.
Oh. All right. Oh, so to actually enjoy and ingest.
Yeah, to ingest.
I'll marry Frank's.
If it delicious. Was socially acceptable, yeah. I would marry them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, mix anything to party with Frank's. So I will marry Frank's. I will cuddle Cholula.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I will trash. It's still enjoyable, but trash Tabasco.
Firmly.
Look at this garbage.
Interesting.
Look at this garbage.
Rico, I'm offended that you don't have Texas Pete or Louisiana on there.
See,
I don't know how you don't include either one of those.
Timeout. That's me and Santi went. This is I asked Santi that question because I had Sriracha too. There's too many. Santi wanted Frank's.
Yeah, Texas Pete and Louisiana both got to be on there. But based on the three choices that you gave me, I will marry Frank's Red Hot as well.
I will disagree with Dave
on the Cholula and cuddle the Tabasco.
Bombs
and I'll trash
seeds.
The Cholula.
Firmly. It's garbage.
It really depends on food, too. Like, I prefer certain hot sauces for certain foods. Like, if I'm having eggs and I want to mix it with my ketchup, it's a different hot sauce than what I'm putting on my chili.
Fair point.
All right, here we go, fellas. After what you saw last night, after what you saw this weekend, who do you think wins the NFC West? Seattle, the Cardinals, or the Rams?
All right, Chris, you're up.
Let's see here. I'm going to still roll with the Seattle Seahawks, man. I'm going to marry them because
if
I picked that team to represent
them.
The NFC in the Super Bowl, and there's no reason for me to back off of that right now. Tough loss in a division opponent on the road in overtime. I'm not going to hold that against them. Defense is suspect, but getting Jamal Adams back will help things on that side of the ball. So I'm going to marry them. I am going to cuddle. I'm going to cuddle the Rams.
Bombs and hellacious seats.
I don't feel great about that cuddle, though. And who's the next one, the 49ers or the Cardinals?
Arizona.
No, Cardinals.
I am going to trash the Cardinals. I think it's just a year ahead of time.
Firmly. It's garbage.
They'll be there next year.
Yeah, I agree across the board. And I don't love Seattle, but I still think they're the best team in this division. And what I say, I don't love them. I don't love them to win the whole thing. But I think they will win this division. So I'll marry them. I agree across the board, so I will. I'll cuddle the Rams.
Bombs and
Rams are good, and for some reason, people just will not give them the credit they deserve. They could very easily be 6-1.
I think it has a lot to do with the quarterback.
Yeah, the quarterback, and they have games like they did against San Francisco where they get smashed.
Well, you know what? They're still a playoff team, and I think they'll compete for that division. But I will cuddle them in this exercise, and I like Arizona, but I don't think they're quite there yet. I will I'll trash them for
this. Firmly garbage.
But that, I mean, how you guys answer that question is further proof that the quarterback is the most important position, because the Rams are the best all around team. Like three phases, like defense, offense.
Yes, I mean defensively, they're light years ahead of what Seattle is.
Seattle is, I mean, the defense is awful. They've given up, like, historically, they've given up the most yards through 7 weeks in the history of football.
Their defense is bad. They win because of their quarterback.
Well,
that's
of
it.
The teams that you just mentioned, Seattle has the best coach and they have the best quarterback. That goes a long ways to win, especially in the playoffs.
That's why we chose them. Yep.
See, and what we're talking about with the Jets and the Giants is the coach and the quarterback. Right now, I'm trying to figure that out. All right. Worst loss of week 7.
I don't need the answers. I don't need them.
What, because Dallas was the worst loss?
No.
No, don't give me the Giants. Don't give me the Giants.
Oh, please.
Giants
the Giants
loss
is the worst loss. That's a horrendous
stop
loss.
Stop it.
Horrendous.
You stop.
If the Giants do not make this trio that you're going to give us, this is Fugazi.
No, the Giants are in the trio.
All right.
I'm going to give you the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you the Dallas Cowboys. Then I'm going to give you the Atlanta Falcons.
That was really a terrible loss.
That's
oh,
what
my
I'm talking
God.
About.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I go first here?
Yeah, you go first, Dave.
Yeah, you know, now when you say worst loss, it can be taken in many different ways. Like, just the most pathetic loss was Dallas. But
I don't know how you didn't throw the Patriots in that one, Rico.
I did. I had four because Dave complained. That
so
the
you weren't going to include the Giants?
No, because I didn't think
I guilted you in. But the Giants is a terrible loss. They have
the
to
The Giants
be
were on the
here.
Road in Philly, man.
But they're up by 11 with 6 minutes to go.
That's why I chose to throw them in there for you.
It was the appropriate move. All right, I'm going to, worst loss, I'm going to put and marry Atlanta.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry
them. I mean, not only for present work, but just their entire body of work, that they continue to have games over and they find ways to lose, which are new and innovative every single week. Guys, they're 1-6. They absolutely should be at least 4-3. It's amazing that that's where they are right now. So I will marry Atlanta. I will cuddle the Giants.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
You are 6 minutes away from leading the division. Bad division, embarrassing season, a lot of question marks, but 6 minutes away from leading this division. That's embarrassing. That's a cuddle. And Dallas is...
Say, quit, no!
Dallas stinks. They are awful. I mean, they could be a 2-14, 3-13 football team this year. So awful loss, but I got to be honest... I wasn't that surprised. I think you're going to see a lot more of this from Dallas, so I will trash the Cowboys for the worst loss of the week.
Look at this garbage!
Okay, one man's trash is another man's treasure. I am going to marry the Cowboys loss because they suffered that loss at the diminutive hands of Kyle Allen. I don't think you need to elaborate any further than that. That's awful. I am going to cuddle... The Giants loss.
Bombs and hellacious.
Because you're trying to answer whether or not Daniel Jones is your franchise quarterback, and had he been able to win that game on a short week on the road in the division against an opponent not named Washington, you would feel differently about him today than you do now. So I just, to me, yeah, I got to cuddle that one. And I'll trash the Falcons because their season's been over. Like, it's been over for weeks. Now it's just a matter of what the team is going to look like and who they're going to move on from, whether it's at the trade deadline or in the offseason.
All right, here you go. By the way, the Seattle Seahawks stat, They allowed 519 yards to Arizona.
Oh.
That brings the grand total up to 2,875 yards in six games, which is the most yards through six games in NFL history.
I mean, so you're looking at like 7,000 yards on the season right now.
Well, they can improve that average. They're going to play the Jets at some point.
So, I mean, just so disrespectful to my poor Jets.
That's true, though. Ugh, you had 190 yards of total offense.
Yeah, but we had four in the second half. Don't forget that. Those were four hard-fought yards in the second half.
They earned every one of those yards.
Every single one of those yards. You can't even saying it still, you can't believe it. Like, you can see it in front of you on paper, and it's hard to believe 4 yards in a whole half of football. All right, here we go. Last one. Best team in the NFL. Don't yell at me. I don't include Green Bay in this because they got whacked by Tampa. Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, the Kansas City Chiefs. Best team in the NFL right now.
Okay.
Chris, you're up.
They're the champs until proven otherwise, so I'm going to marry the Kansas City Chiefs. And them getting Le'Veon Bell just adds another dimension to that offense. Mike Tannenbaum talks about it all the time. You got to throw to score and run to win. And being able to score a bunch of points in the passing game with Mahomes and that 4-by-1 relay team that they call wide receivers and then finish the games by being able to kill the clock with the run game, that to me is just going to be a deadly combination. And this team, when they decide that they're going to turn it on, they're just on another level to those other teams. So I'm going to marry Kansas City. I am going to actually cuddle the Tampa
Bombs
Bay Buccaneers. And here's why. That offense, we knew it was going to take some time for them to figure it out. It seems like that's coming around now. They added Antonio Brown. So they got a ton of weapons for Tom Brady, and they have the best defense in the National Football League. And adding Steve McClendon is going to shore up that run defense after they lost Vita Vea. So I'm going to cuddle the Bucs. And I'm going to trash the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know they're the only undefeated team, but there's still something about that team that I don't necessarily trust, and I guess it's centered around their quarterback. I just keep waiting for Ben Roethlisberger to turn into a pumpkin, and you know we'll see whether or not it happens, but I just – something about it, just I don't trust it.
It's amazing to me that the undefeated team is the one that we lack trust in, but I think that's most people's take. I agree with you. I will marry Kansas City. They're the champions.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
They have the best player in every game they play in, and they are elite right now. So I'll marry Kansas City. We're going to flip-flop, though, the next one. I'm going to cuddle Pittsburgh.
Bombs and
I mean, they've
seats.
Done nothing but win every game and played terrific football. And I do have reservations about Roethlisberger, but that's a complete football team and very well coached. And let me say this before I tell you that I'll trash Tampa. I still give them a real chance to go to the Super Bowl, but of this trio right now, they're the last of the three. I'll trash the Bucs.
Look at this garbage!
That would be a great Super Bowl, though. Could you imagine having Tampa in Tampa going up against Kansas City in the Super Bowl?
Be great.
That'd be awesome.
Because it feels like the Belichick-Brady potential Super Bowl is not going to happen.
Yeah, that's DOA.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Pat Mahomes taking GOAT status from Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
I wonder if he would hand it to him after the game. Be like, here's a GOAT.
Here's a GOAT?
Here's a baby GOAT. It is now yours. All right, I got a couple that were tweeted to me. You want to run through them quickly?
Let's do it.
All right, Bert wants to know, quarterback most likely to be a starter week one, 2021. Cam, Jameis, Trubisky. Cam, Jameis, Trubisky, most likely to be a starter week one.
God, that's a
tough
question.
I'm going to trash Trubisky.
Yeah.
That's easy for me. I don't think he's going to be in Chicago, and he's not going to walk into a situation where they're just going to tap him as the week one starter. I would probably marry Cam.
I'm going to marry Jameis.
I don't feel great about saying that right now, just based on what we've seen the last couple of weeks. But I think he's going to have an opportunity to show whether or not he can be a franchise quarterback. And once he gets right and puts more time and space between when he tested positive for COVID and now, I think he's going to be a better football player. I saw what I saw in the first month of the season, and I think – that he can show us that at some point again this year. And if he does, there'll be a team that gives him an opportunity to be a starting quarterback. And I'll cuddle Jameis. I don't love it. I mean, even if Drew Brees retires, I think Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis are going to bring in somebody to compete with him for that job. I don't know. I don't see him as a week one starter in 2021.
Hellacious seeds.
You could have all three of those guys not be week one starters.
They could be.
Agreed. But
certainly Trubisky I don't think will be.
Yeah.
No, and it depends on what happens with Cam here moving forward, because the last couple games he's been bad.
Did you give yours or no?
No, I'll trash Trubisky. The only team that Jameis probably starts for is going to be the Saints, and I kind of agree with Chris that they'll bring someone in to compete. Now, so I'll marry Cam, and I'll cuddle Jameis.
All right, you want one saucy one, or should we leave it?
I love sauce. Give me the sauce.
CMT, TMKS, Don, Michael, Peter.
This is not the definition of saucy. See ya!
Do you want to punt on it?
I'm going to marry Michael, cuddle Peter, and I'm going to trash Don.
What?
Wow. Wow.
Why would you trash Don?
I don't think Don likes me. So what am I going to do? I'm going to cuddle someone that doesn't like me?
You know what, though, Rico? I'm going to agree across the board because of that phone call we got from Don several weeks ago when he came on our show. Wasn't a good guy.
Wow. So you're also going to trash Don?
Yeah, I'm going to trash Don. Yeah.
Wow.
Garbage. Don Juan LaGreca can kick rocks.
Wow. Hot sauce to the eye kind of feeling.
And as far as the softball tournament's concerned,
yeah,
I may bring my own team.
I might bring the green lights or the knuckles.
I'm bringing the knuckles.
You bring the knuckles.
Knuckles win the whole thing.
Oh yeah, come on, Dave. It's multiple time champions.
Nice.
can I just say something that
you think Santiago doubles off the knuckles?
No, there's no chance.
No,
Santiago hasn't made contact in softball yet. If we bring a beach ball, maybe. We'd have to throw the pitcher a beach ball instead of the softball so we can hit it.
Oh, God.
This is one of the worst parenting moments of my life the other day. And I didn't even realize it until it happened. So Milo's doing Zoom school, and like he gets off a seat and then goes back and sits down, and I notice he's wearing a hat. So I'm not even paying attention. So then he gets back up. I'm like,
no.
Why'd you put a hat on? Yeah. What hat do you think he's wearing?
He's wearing the knuckles?
He's wearing the knuckles.
No.
I was like, please, God. Please do not get an email that the teacher realized what that hat was. Please.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. That's awful. Today on ESPN Daily, finally, Tua time in Miami is Tua. Oh, God. Tagovailoa, is that how you say it?
Yes.
I get these names. Might as well have the fighter be the quarterback. Tua Tagovailoa will start a quarterback against the Rams this weekend. Hear whether he's ready for prime time and what's at stake on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. And, of course, I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Kicks them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.